The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Welcome into Rover Sports. We're here on a fine Tuesday night, and this is going to be a baseball Rover Sports. We're going to be talking about a lot tonight, talking about, of all things, the National Anthem at the Home Run Derby, talking about Phillies acquisitions, talking about the first-place Phillies. But first of all, we have two wonderful baseball authors, two national authors, Dave Brown and Jeff Rodimer, are on the line, and they wrote a very beautiful book called Shadows of Glory, dealing with the World Series. The World Series is the pinnacle of baseball. And this is not just any World Series book. So I want to, without any further ado, I want to introduce Dave Brown and Jeff Rodimer.
Hey, guys.
Thanks, guys. How are you?
Good evening. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing great.
Very good.
The All-Star game.
Fantastic. But we also have Charlie Bowles is going to be on remote. Charlie Bowles is our charter rover, and he's also going to be – we're all going to be kind of peppering you with questions. But firstly, gentlemen, tell us about this book, Shadows of Glory.
So this is Dave, and I started the book initially with another friend, and then Jeff came on board a little later, and he'll describe how that came about. But the thought behind the book is, you know, the World Series has featured many, many very iconic moments. Bill Mazeroski's series-winning home run in 1960, Don Larsen's perfect game in 56, Babe Ruth's called shot, Kirk Gibson's amazing home run in 1988. And while these are great events, they have been covered and written about extensively over the years. And I thought, why don't we do a book about lesser well-known moments in World Series history, things that even hardcore fans might not know about, and offbeat moments. So came up with stories about 18 World Series stretching from 1918, when Babe Ruth was pitching for the Red Sox, until 2016, when, of course, the Cubs broke their long drought and won the series. So it's just a quick example of one of the stories is, you know, Don Larsen pitches his perfect game in 1956. Nobody had thrown a perfect game or no hitter up until then. But in 1947, Bill Bevins was a middle of the rotation pitcher for the Yankees. And in a game four against the Dodgers, incredibly, he took a no-hitter into the ninth inning. He had walked a lot of batters along the way, and the Yankees were leading 2-1 going into the ninth inning. And just what happened in the ninth inning is absolutely remarkable, and unbelievable story. I won't divulge the details right now, but it's just an example of, you know, a very offbeat moment in World Series history that, you know, many baseball fans don't know about. So that's really the theme of the book.
So, Jeff, I understand that you and Dave have known each other since college, Gettysburg, a great school. I know Dave personally. He's a lawyer by day, baseball historian by night, and a great guy, and I've known him for decades. And I was so thrilled to be able to shine a light here in Philly on Rover Sports, you know, arguably, you know, putting modesty aside, arguably the most listened to show in the area. And we, you know, we're headed nicely here on WWDB.
How about in the world?
Maybe so. I don't want to get too grandiose, but Jeff, I understand that you had some commitments, family commitments, and you decided once you saw Dave was plowing ahead, you say, "I got to join this guy." So, Jeff, tell us about your experience writing this book, and maybe give us a World Series, give us a teaser.
Well, sure, and thanks for having us on. And the way, I mean, it just does go all the way back to our college days. We met in college, and even then, Dave was a huge fan of baseball and baseball trivia, and he would type out these trivia quizzes back in the 80s or the late 70s, actually, on his typewriter, go to the college library, make copies of them, staple them together, and then hand out the quizzes to all of his friends. And this actually is kind of the blueprint for what became his first book years later after he graduated. So I have read every word that he's ever commercially written. And when he did float the idea to me that he was interested in doing another baseball book, and this was at the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, I thought of all of the things he was considering, the theme of this book was just a really good one, and I encouraged him to go forward. And then he surprised me by offering me the chance to co-write it with him. And I had not told him. I was just about to retire after many years working for the same company, and I was done, and I didn't want to have any commitments. I didn't want accountability. I didn't want to have anybody waiting for me to do something and maybe the chance I would somehow let them down and not be there for them. And he started writing this with another person. And eventually, when that did not work out, we were both in a different place, and there was an opportunity for me to help. And the goal was, you know, let's not let this book fall by the wayside. It's too good of an idea. And one of the stories that he originally pitched to me, which I think kind of demonstrates the whole theme of the book, is the 1973 World Series between the Mets and the A's. And in the second game of the World Series, a utility player who the owner of the A's didn't even want on his team makes two critical errors in extra innings. They lose the game. And in the aftermath, Charlie Finley, the owner of the A's, tries to throw this guy off the team right in the middle of the World Series.
Wow, and that's fantastic. What a starchy Charlie Finley, such a starchy character. We have Coach Josh Dacey here, who's also unofficial baseball historian. So we've got two incredible baseball historians. You have a chance to ask a question about this Shadows of Glory book, and we recommend you could find it anywhere where books are purchased, on Amazon, on Kindle, what's it called? Barnes and Noble. Haven't been to a bookstore in a while, just because I have drones dropping books, in front of our house. There's a drone. My wife, there's everything dropping, like clothing drones, continuously. So, Josh, you're on with David Brown and Jeff Rodimer.
So, guys, what's one of the stories that you, when you researched, you were like, "Wow, we've got to tell this story." What's the one story that you came across? Because it's always, we always talk about, when you think about the World Series, you obviously talk about Kirk Gibson, you think of Bill Buckner. Those moments, what's the one story that you found where, like, we've got to tell this story? This is going to be something that sets everything apart from that you found. What's that one story that you're most proud of that you discovered?
Yeah, good question, Josh. And, you know, the stories were just so interesting in various ways. And, you know, I have to go with the Philly story, because there's only one story in the book that concerns the Phillies, and that was the 2009 World Series. And, of course, the year before, the Phillies had beaten Tampa Bay in the World Series, and they were looking to make it two in a row. And, you know, that team, of course, was just loaded with Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins and Cole Hamels. And mid-season in July of 2009, the Phillies acquired Cliff Lee in that trade with the Indians. And Cliff had won the Cy Young Award the previous season. So Cliff comes over, and he quickly becomes a fan favorite. He just, you know, he's just throwing shutouts and just winning game after game, and Phillies fans love him. And then he's dominant in the playoffs. And then here comes the World Series against the Yankees, and Cliff had not pitched in the postseason before, and the 2009 World Series opened at Yankee Stadium, and of course Charlie Manuel gave Cliff the start. And you know, there's just a remarkable backstory that the afternoon before the game, most of the team just took the bus up to the Bronx to Yankee Stadium, but Cliff just decided to go a little bit later, not take the team bus, and he takes a cab from Manhattan to the Bronx, leaving plenty of time to be there for the 8 o'clock start. But about halfway up to Yankee Stadium, unbelievably, the cab is in a terrible traffic jam, and the cab is not moving, and the cabbie calls the dispatcher and tells Cliff, "Hey, we're not going to be Yankee Stadium for 2 hours, the way things are going here." And 2 hours, that coincided with the start of the game. So there's Cliff Lee sitting in the back seat of the cab thinking, wait a minute, this is the moment of my life. I've been asked to start game one of the World Series, and I'm not going to be able to do it because I got stuck in traffic. And that's what's going through Cliff's head. And he calls his agent, he calls the Phillies clubhouse manager, just, you know, frantic, trying to figure out what to do under these incredibly unusual circumstances. And they basically tell him, why don't you try to find a police officer who will give you an escort up to the Yankee Stadium. And you know, the cab is still like inching forward, not going anywhere. There's no police officers in sight. And then Cliff has a thought. When he was with the Indians, every once in a while, he would take a cab from Midtown up to Yankee Stadium. And he said, you know, that's going to be my best bet here. If I stay in the cab, I might not be there on time. So the cab driver gets him to the closest subway station. Cliff jumps out, pays the fare, gets in on a subway, has to change subways along the way, and makes it to Yankee Stadium. Nobody recognizes him on the cab, apparently, on the subway, apparently. And when he gets off the subway, when he had gone up before, he was pitching in the old Yankee Stadium, and this was the new Yankee Stadium, and he didn't know how to get into the stadium. He didn't know where the player's entrance was, and he called back the clubhouse manager, and who basically told Cliff, "Hey, listen, why don't you just go stand outside the McDonald's, which is right across the street from Yankee Stadium. We'll send somebody out to get you." And that's what happened. And that person came over, brought Cliff, over to the stadium and got dressed, but he still was, you know, way behind the eight ball. But he nevertheless was, you know, he was known for, you know, not getting fazed easily. So he dressed, warmed up. And what's amazing is then he went out, and many of you will remember that he then pitched one of the greatest games in World Series history against a team whose lineup featured Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, Mark Teixeira. And we talked to Mark Teixeira, who wrote the foreword, and he just says it's just one of the unbelievable games he's ever seen. Cliff gave up one earned run, no walks, 10 strikeouts, and it's amazing that he was able to pitch that remarkable a game despite that pregame chaos that I think a lot of people don't know about. And that was just one of Jeff's and my favorite stories in the book, just because it's so unusual and so offbeat.
Yeah, that story is phenomenal in so many ways. It reminds me just in recent history of the golfer at the PGA, the number one ranked player, Scottie Scheffler, and what could have happened, and just how the community, how the Phillies even let Cliff Lee like have that autonomy to do something like that. That is great. I wanted to ask both of you. It's Spencer Grossinger, by the way. I wanted to ask you guys, if I were to drop you into any decade, and you guys might have been living in this time, when do you think was the golden age of baseball? And it could even be present day. What was your favorite era of baseball to cover?
Yeah, good question. Jeff, take it.
Well, I would look at that a couple of different ways, but absolutely it has to be post-integration. I don't think there's any doubt that the talent level was escalated tremendously once black players were finally allowed to be on major league teams. Of all of the stories that we wrote, I actually looked back and I saw that they were pretty well distributed over the decades. There wasn't one decade where we went hog wild. And really, it's a matter of knowing what you don't know to write these stories, because you don't always know where those stories are going to be. That's the whole nature of them. They're unknown. They're underreported. There are things that people have forgotten about. And oftentimes they feature lesser known players who in many cases never even played baseball again after those World Series. So if I were to pick a favorite era, it might not be the same as the favorite era from which we drew the stories. I'm partial to the 60s. That's when I first became a big Yankee fan. Started following baseball closely, was collecting baseball cards like every other kid. So that's always been kind of my favorite decade when I look back. But certainly from a talent level, it's got to be post-integration.
I want to just insert a thought that one of my favorite chapters of the book, there's a chapter of the 18 that deals with the World Series with the Negro Leagues, and of all years, 1942, in the middle of World War II. And without stealing or giving away any spoilers, this is a World Series that involved traveling to many different areas, dealing with adversity, changing players, some guys coming in, some guys going out. And just speaking of pre-integration, a tremendous chapter. So we're at the top of the hour, but I want to thank, of course, David Brown, Jeffrey Rodimer. The book is called Shadows of Glory. Everybody, let's support these guys. It sounds wonderful. It's also great for your kids. I know Al Zafiri was one who clued us into this, and Al said he reads it to his 8-year-old every night, a new chapter. So, guys, thanks for coming on.
That's
thanks
awesome.
For joining Rover Sports.
Thanks a lot.
Guys, thanks again for having us on.
Talk to you later. Go Philly.
There we go. So, we are Rover Sports. We want to thank everybody. We're going to go into our last segment, which is our second segment. Firstly, Charlie Bowles, want to welcome you in, and we're going to talk a little bit of Phillies. There's a guy named Mason Miller, who's an all-star. This guy throws between 100 and 104 miles per hour. We're actually going to take a brief break, and then we'll come right back. Here we go.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
So I want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody logging into Rover Sports again. Listening on Philly Radio 97.5 FM HD2 WWDB 860. People on their phones, like all of us, WDBAM.com or Bruce Grossinger Facebook. So, Charlie, I want to get you involved in this because we really were so excited to have the national authors of that book. And this time of the dog days, the All-Star break, there is a guy named Mason Miller who actually flew to the All-Star game with Bryce Harper and with some of the Phillies. And he actually he asked Bryce Harper if he could throw to him. He throws 103, 104. So on the plate, Bryce said, I'd love to. And when he actually landed, he thought better of it, and he decided – I guess he didn't want to be injured. So there was a trade offer by Lisa from Reading. They say Andrew Painter straight up for Mason Miller. How would you react to that, Charlie?
I don't. And good to be here. I don't think the A's would even pick up the phone if that were the case. I think you're going to have to take at least two of the top 10, if not three of the top 10 prospects for him.
Right. So you're right. And They have the team is under control for 6 years. This guy is a great guy. He's been in the league for 2 years with the Oakland A's. Spence, have you heard of this guy?
Is he a closer?
Yes.
He's a closer.
Yeah, he's just, I mean, this would probably put the Phillies over the top. I mean, but you have to look, Bruce. I mean, Hoffman has been, this bullpen has been pretty solid this year. You have Strom. I think Hoffman you would maybe trust in a closer's role. Alvarado's had his moments. Dominguez is kind of coming back. I don't see the necessary need to make this deal. I really don't.
Go ahead. Josh, what are your thoughts?
Doc, I would love to add him. I really would. I think there's so many times the top prospects just never pan out. This guy's for real. You know, everyone talks about how good Painter could be. We'll see. You know, Sixto Sanchez was supposed to be the greatest pitcher of all time, and quickly he got traded for Realmuto, and his career has really never been the same. There's so many prospects. At one point, you know, we go back to Doug Drabek's son. He was supposed to be Kyle Drabek was supposed to be the can't-miss prospect in the farm system. So was Dom Brown. Those guys haven't panned out. If you want to win now, and I think this team's in win mode, I think you're adding a left fielder, and I think you can add this guy. And I think, ironically, both Charlie and I agree you can get these guys from the same team. If you have to give up a Justin Crawford, an Aiden Miller, I'm all in. Let's do it. You know, let's do it. Because I think this is a team where we are in an era of Philadelphia baseball, Phillies baseball. The next 3 to 4 years, this is where we can go after and get 2 or 3 rings, and that would make everybody a lot happier in Philadelphia. And regardless of how good Aiden Miller and Painter and some of the other prospects are, that's 6-7 years down the line. We live in a now era.
And Painter is a great prospect. He underwent Tommy John. Most people that go through Tommy John, they usually do great. They often throw better. They have long careers. So, Charlie, how would you assess the Phillies' needs? And, you know, before the trade deadline, do you agree with Josh, a big bat and a reliever, or you think more put the emphasis on a big bat?
No, I do. I think they need both. And I think you could make a real strong argument that the Phillies lost last year because of a complete breakdown of not having a closer. I would not trust Hoffman. I would not trust anybody in that closing role in Game 7 that they have. Miller, also interesting, is open to going back to be a starter if he has the opportunity. But I think in this case, they'd be getting him to shut down games. And then obviously the bat. Like, you know, again, I'm coming around on Rojas a little bit. He's been that good defensively. But, you know, again, just that pop that Rooker showed over the weekend, man. Wow, what an audition.
Spencer, you're Dave Dombrowski.
Mm-hmm.
It's time. The audition's over. It's time to win. Your team's in first place. They're mature. They're ready. This town has supported the Phillies, selling out every single game, including, of all teams, the Oakland A's, who are just having an epically bad year, even for the A's. So number one, if you want to name individual players, but who would you trade for to try to fortify this team, Spence?
Well, I do like this lefty bat that's on the Athletics too. I think it's Blade, who's an outfielder there. It's batting like 270. Josh made a good point. I mean, Josh actually made me change my mind. He changed my mind because I thought that Ryan Kirkering, and I thought that this bullpen, I didn't think it needed adjustments, but you know, Bryce Harper and Trey Turner are in their absolute primes. And I think that this is the year for the Phillies. They swept the Dodgers convincingly. I think they have the best record in baseball. And to me, this just seems like the golden year. And it seems like a year, like you look at the Boston Celtics and they were able to roll through the playoffs. I think the Phillies can do similar. I think that this could be a dominant team that absolutely should, you know, contend for a title and win a title this year. So do whatever you can. And as a Phillies fan, this has been the best baseball experience that I've, you know, had other than 2008 and 2009.
So, Josh, I think that this city is white hot, mm-hmm. especially with the Dodgers coming in and sweeping the Dodgers here, blowing him away, holding him to 5 runs in a 3-game series. And this team is just showing its dominance, showing its chemistry. As you look to the second half of the season, right around the corner, what are you going to be watching in the second half of the season?
Well, one of the things that I love is how much chemistry these guys have. They have a ton of chemistry. One of the things that I'm not upset with is that Suarez probably is not pitching. Let's not forget, guys, we have 7 guys playing in the All-Star game tonight. That's remarkable. You know, You've got Turner and Baum and Harper are starters. You got Wheeler out there. You've got Hoffman. You've got Strom. And then you got Sanchez. So there's a ton of guys are out there. I mean, they've been playing great. Can they sustain this? I'm hoping. I spent a lot of time this weekend with several different people, and they're like, "How excited are you about the second half?" I hope we're just as happy with the second half as we are in the first half, because October could be pretty special.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't usually like novelty events, but I can tell you the home run derby last night with Alec Bohm and going in to the finals, and also, of course, the national anthem, which was epically bad because I always envisioned myself singing the national anthem, but I know I couldn't hit really any of the notes. But I think I could have done a better job than a lady last night. Charlie, did you see that in real time?
I did, and she checked herself into rehab this afternoon. She came out and said she was drunk and apologized. Obviously, something was going on with her, so she's got some serious issues. Probably, you know, feel bad for her. Hope she recovers. Yeah, because I mean, that was a national embarrassment. I can't believe that many people were watching, because that's all people were talking about last night on Twitter and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, she really did damage.
You know what's interesting, Charlie? I actually went back because I wanted to know. She you know, she didn't really hit any notes. She was flat the whole time. She would hold certain notes in the song where they're not meant to be held.
Yep.
In other areas, she would basically speak through and not even sing the notes. Couldn't hit the falsetto at the end of the song. And I don't know. Like, honestly, I'm looking at, if I were her agent, would you admit that somebody is drunk and actually, knowing they're drunk, they actually take the stage and embarrass themselves? I actually turned back. I wanted to see if she could sing at all. And I'm happy to say that people make mistakes. I actually listened to, she did a little recording just on a piano. And she's a country singer, and she kind of sings through it. And I must tell you, she was very entertaining. So, number one, she was obviously drunk. That's inexcusable. But there are certain voices that don't – that's a big song to sing. Sure. But there are certain people, including myself, whose voices don't have the range to sing the national anthem and have no business. I just wonder if they auditioned her – What happened there, Spetsy? What do you think?
This is a great day for baseball. We're talking about the home run derby. I mean, it's the best all-star game. I think that this could be a tremendous comeback story. You know what Kate's, what is it, Scott sings sings the Flyers national anthem? She can every year debut. Imagine next year she's the comeback woman of the year and sings the national anthem beautifully. I'd be excited every year to see it. And it was so strange. You saw Alec Bohm up there on the panel.
He's so funny. Bohm is, yeah, his face is everywhere.
It was the strangest setup, but MLB did amazing. They got Buffer in there. Michael Buffer did a phenomenal job. Josh, I want her to sing every single year. She relates to the average person who doesn't have a couple of drinks and enjoys a little baseball.
Spencer, she'll never be on stage again at a sporting facility ever to sing that. She had her shot. It's over.
Oh, come on. Right. We're the land of second chances.
Well, not that is true. I agree kind of part of – Charlie, will she get another shot at the anthem?
No. She again, right now she's turning into a sad story. I mean, you know, you got to crawl into rehab the next day. Like, you know, there's some other things going
on. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, we don't make fun of her. In other words, I thought it was funny a little bit. You know, I watch Alec Bohm, who's a funny guy, who – and I watched some of the guys try to be real serious. So
it's crazy that she would sign up for this and that no one in her inner circle knew that she was going through this. I mean, that is pretty insane.
She's such an
alcoholic. She has to go to rehab, but nobody stopped her from performing this event. You think that she could just be embarrassed and just to save face and say that she was drunk?
How about what Joe Namath was drunk and tried to pick up a sideline reporter.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Joe Namath, he seemed to, you know, he was a guy, it wasn't particularly surprising. He lost his on-air job, but he's still a legend. You know, people make mistakes, and he did. Some people drink because they're nervous.
Right.
But I think she certainly went past that point, Josh.
She's also a Grammy nominee. So she's
four times. She's got to be able to sing a little bit to be nominated four times. Sure. She's got to at times be able to sing.
And let's not forget this, Doc. With all due respect, it's the home run derby. Okay, it's not the Super Bowl. It's not the World Series. It's not even the All Star game.
It's like the slam dunk.
Yeah,
it is supposed to be, and it's ironic. I think there are more views on her version of the national anthem probably than Any all year long, if you took all the national anthems, and I guess that's what kind of it's kind of interesting. When something is so bad, it could be good.
Exactly. It's bringing eyeballs to the game. Now, the Home Run Derby itself, I thought it was very compelling, very tight.
Give us a recap for those who are not familiar with the finalists, which was really exciting. I thought the rules were really good. Where if you hit a really long home run, mm-hmm. you get an extra ball. It's kind of like a money ball, yeah. and you can keep rolling. I thought that part of it really was compelling. I thought that was a great home run derby.
Teoscar Hernandez ends up winning the derby. And Josh, I remember that your dream was to be an outfielder for the home run derby.
In 2 years when it's in Philadelphia, I hope to be an outfielder for the home run derby. I think it is incredible.
And I would like to see you rob somebody of a home run.
climb the wall over
the fence.
Would you ever do that a little Moises Alou style? Would you ever do that?
Would you be like a guy like Bartman in Chicago? Would you be Bartman?
Without a doubt.
So Alec Bohm, I mean, Charlie, you're the gambling expert. He had very long odds to win this thing. Were you surprised at how it shook out last night, Charlie?
I thought Bohm was the last choice, but I thought Bobby Witt Jr. Yeah. would be the choice because it was different this year. He only had 40 pitches, and I had thought he had his father pitching to him, but didn't end up pitching to him, by the way, which he was supposed to, and then he dropped out. I thought that was going to be the clear-cut advantage, and that's who I backed, and he lost in the finals. So, Bohm really impressed. He came out number one, took the lead, you know, kind of never. But he also choked in the end. He had three chances to hit a home run and go into the finals. I guess he was just gassed at that point.
By the way, terrible pitcher, right? For Bobby Witt, right?
I thought the Phillies pitcher, you know, wasn't that great. He was throwing a lot of balls. I just want to give a big shout out to Eddie Greaves, you know, who's one of our great friends, one of our charter rovers. WABC is watching now, so just want to say hi to Eddie. And as far as the All-Star game, Josh, what do you look at? So let me ask you this. I remember in the past, the winner of the All-Star game, I think, would maybe host a World Series. Yeah. There was some meaning to it. I think they removed that meaning. Is there anything to be gained by winning the All-Star game?
It's a pride thing, Doc. I mean, let's be honest. They've several players have said getting picked to the All-Star game is like as close as you're going to get picked by the Hall of Fame. This is an incredible moment for a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys are on bad teams that they're the lone representative of that team. I mean, we can go through the list of Phillies that were the lone representatives through the dark era of baseball. Mike Lieberthal was an All-Star. Let's not forget that. Lieberthal was a terrible catcher, but is on the Phillies Hall of Fame.
Walk. I guess he was there to represent. I know that you have one representative, so
Absolutely. He
was lucky to be the best of the worst that year.
Couldn't. I don't think he could hit for any power, Lieberthal.
He's a very average pitcher.
Josh, do you remember when Torrey Hunter robbed Barry Bonds?
Great story. Great story.
Yeah, and tell us your favorite All-Star, including that story. All-Star
moment. That's a great one. I mean, what about the All-Star games that go down to the 16th inning, and all of a sudden you have all these pitchers that didn't think about it? There's been several different. Pete Rose is obviously the one that they worry about the most, about him going in. And Charlie, who was the catcher? Ray Fossey.
Ray Fossey.
Remember Ray Fossey? That was just a bone-crushing collision. Yep. I think that, when we talk about World Series moments, I think that collision between Pete Rose, who is Pete Rose, that's probably the one moment. If you ask me, what's one moment you remember? Yeah. That would be the one. That would be the clarifying moment. But again, that was before your board.
So Pete Rose.
This is the 70s. So
charged the catcher.
He rushed the catcher. It just knocked him over. It was like the biggest collision. Did he drop the ball? I forget exactly what happened.
Did it start a brawl? And the catcher wasn't expecting any sort of competitive play.
It didn't start a brawl, actually, because that was expected in those days. You were allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And that was a different era of sports in general.
Sure. Bruce, I'll ask you this question. If you're a pitcher, a veteran pitcher like Wheeler or some of these other pitchers, and a rookie is starting, would that kind of make you feel a little some type of way, a little bit angry or build your competitive fire that Paul Skeens, a 23-year-old kid, is starting ahead of me? Wouldn't that feed a little fire to you?
Not really. Paul Skeens is having an incredible year. Yeah. He's a great pitcher. Speaking of no-hitters.
He didn't even start up here, though, Bruce. He didn't even start in the majors this year.
I'm going to answer your question. If I might.
Okay, go ahead.
So Paul Skeens was taken out. He had thrown 99 pitches. He had a chance to be the first Pittsburgh Pirate to ever throw a no-hitter. And this is a guy who threw 100 pitches. I looked at LSU. He threw 100 pitches 20 times in his senior year. So this is not a guy who couldn't do it. And he was a gentleman. Like, off camera, Skeeds was pissed off.
Sure.
But the fact that this guy is having a great year, if I'm a veteran and there's a rookie who's having a great year, tip my hat to him. Josh?
Doc, it promotes the growth of the game when you have a guy like this. Is this young? First of all, he's a first-round pick, first overall pick last year. This rarely ever happens. This isn't basketball or football where your first-round pick is immediately thrown into major leagues. They've got to go through high A, single A, high A, double A, triple A, all the way up. It didn't happen to Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper spent a year or two in the minors, 18 months. You know, Steve Strasburg did the exact same thing. This guy has gone from high A to the majors in a year.
No, and I think the guy is an exciting pitcher. He's 6'6". He throws over 100 miles an hour. And I think it's great. And I think it's also great for the Pirates. There are certain teams that have just been down.
Yeah.
Just like we talked about some of those prospects for the A's. The A's are having a horrible year. They're sellers. That's why it's really interesting now to talk about acquiring some of the Oakland A's.
I'm just going to play devil's advocate to your point. I love the no-hitter, and I agree with you, Bruce. I wanted him to get that no-hitter. But I think that with so many Tommy John injuries like Walker Buehler, Tyler Glasgow, the whole Dodgers rotation is injured for the whole year. I think that they're so paranoid about Steven Strasburg and ruining this young guy's career that when he hit that 100 pitches, when he hit that C note, I think that they, you know, shut him down because they're so precautionary. I think that's the devil's advocacy.
And I don't think, and again, I'm not saying, I didn't come out necessarily, I didn't criticize the manager.
No, I wanted the no-hitter too.
It would have been interesting.
I wanted it.
This is a matter of discussion. Listening to a lot of sports, Mad Dog and ESPN, and, you know, we're always driving around listening to podcasts. That was that was the major topic of the time. And again, you're absolutely right. If somebody blows, you're going into the All-Star break. You have a guy who's a tremendous asset. Imagine if he hurt himself now. The A's have to do something to come off the mat. They have lost so many baseball games this year.
Well, they are. They're going to move to Vegas. That's how they're coming off the mat, Doc. You know, I mean, their stadium's in ruins. Like, they've been a disaster. People have boycotted the stadium this year. So they're going to move. They'll be in Vegas next year.
And Charlotte Stadium. I don't know if you've ever set foot.
Go ahead, Charlie.
They'll be in Sacramento for a year first. Like, it's a total disaster.
You're right. Actually, I heard Utah also, Charlie.
Yeah, they don't have the money to fit. They don't even have the money raised to finish their stadium yet. It's an absolute disaster what's going on
Charlie,
there.
Charlie, I actually
the players want to go to Vegas.
Have you ever been to that stadium? I was there once, and I walked in there. Just because back in the day I wanted to buy like a Vita blue jersey or something, that stadium was falling apart. I mean, absolutely falling apart. I was around Oakland. I was at the football stadium, the Oakland Alameda Stadium. They're no longer there, but it was just incredible. Even to take that subway into Oakland was certainly an interesting experience.
The BART, but I actually loved the old Warriors Stadium, the Oracle Arena. I thought that was one of the coolest. Have you ever been to Oracle Arena?
I have, Spence. I was there when I was out with it.
What do you remember about Spence? There's one thing I remember about Oracle Arena. The lighting there was really unusual. The lighting was like this gold. Now, again, the team is wearing gold outfits. But the lights, not even like the lighting in our studio, Matt Vito. It was this weird brown, disorienting light. You and I were there. Wasn't it just weird?
So I have an affinity for the older stadiums, but the fact that – because just like the new Giants Stadium is not as classic and good as the old stadium, and the Vet Stadium was great. But with the Oakland Coliseum, they've just done a terrible job of keeping up with it, and then its fan base is not really even caring. I think that they should do like a major league? They should make it a comedy and just take the most entertaining players and have a whole party about it.
Charlie, you have a son, the Bear, who – certainly is now is growing up, waking up to sports. Is there one stadium that you play? Obviously, we're here in Philly. The Bank is, I think, a great stadium, great timeout. Do you have any plans to take your son to any stadiums in the near future?
I'm actually going to Target Field next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the Philly series out in Minnesota. I really want to see that stadium. It looks pretty cool, so I'm going out for the entire series.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I didn't even know that, so I'm glad I was able to tee you up. And that sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. And the good news, it's not going to be 35 below zero.
Yeah, it's supposed to be beautiful weather so far. That can change. So, you know, I'm staying at the Ivy, which is like, you know, on par with the Ritz. It's walking distance to the stadium. So, you know, I'm going to stay for all three games.
So, Josh, how interested are you in seeing this city host not only an MLB All-Star game, but also hosting the World Cup? And I don't know if you saw in Miami all those fans breaking into the stadium, the Colombian versus Argentina game. Very curious to see how the link is gonna hold a game like that.
Yeah, I hope we're more civil in Philadelphia than they were in Miami. Maybe it's because
if we are, they won't report it.
Yeah.
If there's one fan who is drunk, that'll be front page of every newspaper.
Yeah.
But I must say, I don't watch a lot of soccer, but the whole fanfare before, during, and after the game was riveting, you know, to see that, to see Messi hurt. But I don't watch soccer, but I must say, much like Caitlin Clark, it takes a game of that magnitude to get somebody who's absolutely a non-soccer fan it was on every bar and everywhere at restaurant. I think that was great for the game of soccer, Josh.
It DACA promotes it, but like I said, I believe in a civilized environment, so I'd rather not see fans trampled and people stomped over. If you can't afford the ticket, there's always
people could really get hurt. I mean, in soccer, probably in any other sport, there's been more deaths and more riots,
yeah,
than certainly football here in the United States.
And Doc, right. You know what? If you can't afford a ticket, there's always a TV you can watch it on. You know?
No,
that's right. That's not excusable.
Exactly. Did you know, Bruce, that in 2 years, it's coming to Citizens Bank Park?
And I'll watch it.
No, the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game is coming.
Well, that'll be great. And again, we like to go, you know, I must say about we're fair weather friends. And also, we try to go, like you and I, Spence, go to a few games. We love to go to playoff games. We love to go to Stanley Cup games. But when there's a big event in Philly, that's what Rover, we're going to have all the Rovers go.
Just cannot wait.
And I just want to, as we wind this show down, I want to just give a big shout out for Shadows of Glory, for Dave. Dave Brown, Jeff Rodiver, who came on and really spotlighted their book. And it's nice, as we head into the summer, we're going to have a lot of football. My brother Doug is going to be hosting a lot of great players here in Philly at Marion Golf Club. And a lot of guys like Dan Marino, Jim Kelly, and all those guys. We're going to be having a lot of them here on Rover Sports. So on behalf of Josh Stacey, Spencer G, Charlie Bowles, and, of course, our producers, Colin Newby, Matthew Vito, Sports Doc. As always, good night and good sports.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
What's up, Philadelphia? This is the first episode of First Time Caller, Long Time Expert. I'm Colin Newby of 97.5 The Fanatic and 93.3 WMMR in the Philadelphia cluster of the Beasley Media radio stations. I'm going to be coming to you weekly, at least for now weekly, with the Philly Sports Talk podcast. Yes, it's another one. This one, though, we're going to lean into the sports radio element a little bit. I grew up listening to sports radio in Philadelphia. I've always considered it the pulse of the city, the voice of the fan base. And I work at the Fanatic now. Mostly I do a lot of content on the website, 975thefanatic.com. So you're going to hear me reference that a lot throughout the podcast. And I also do some other stuff for the company's digital initiatives. What we do is we take everything that's already on the radio and we put it on the internet. Plus, I've worked in the promotions department for a while now, just doing remote broadcasts and then things with the MMR DJs and all. So that'll play a lot into the show. And we're also going to get a lot of guest appearances from some radio personalities when the times call for it. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about what's going on in the world of content creation, but we're going to focus on Philly sports as the substance to the podcast, and I expect it to be mostly Philly's talk in the summer months. Flyers talk's going to pick up once the calendar calls for it a little better. And I'm sure when the fall comes around, there will be more Eagles talk and Sixers talk too. But we'll probably fixate mostly on the Phillies and the Flyers. The reason for that being that I'm down at the games as the in-person correspondent for the Fanatic. So I could take the temperature down there at Citizens Bank Park or at the Wells Fargo Center for Flyers games a little better, even though I'm following all four teams. I'm not on site for the Eagles or the Sixers, for the most part at least. But to get to the Phillies, they just hit the All-Star break. We're recording Tuesday afternoon before the All-Star game. They got 8 selections, only 6 of the Phillies that got selected are going to be there, but they did earn 8 selections. And they are 62-34. That's the best record in baseball. And just a ton of stats that jump off the page at you from the first half of the season. Phillies are 3rd in the majors in runs per game. That's behind only the Yankees, who are just an absolute offensive juggernaut this season. Aaron Judge has been absolutely on fire. They're also a sliver behind the Arizona Diamondbacks, of course, the team that knocked them out in the NLCS last season. But other than being 3rd in runs a game, they're 2nd in team ERA. Already mentioned the 8 All-Star selections, but that's the most in franchise history. And if you look at most of the credible sports books right now, they have them as the 2nd favorite to win the World Series, even though they have the best record. The Dodgers are the odds-on favorite by DraftKings, FanDuel, I think most of the big ones. But I'm very high on this team. I feel I'm owed some exposure to good teams. My first year blogging about the Flyers was the year they came out of the pandemic, the 2020-21 season. That was really the beginning of the end. Remember, they had a good season going into the pandemic and into the bubble playoffs, where they did get to the 2nd round, Game 7, so 1 game away from the Eastern Conference Final. But the following season, they missed the playoffs, and that started a string of 4 in a row. So that's only the 2nd time in franchise history that's happened. You got to go all the way back to the late 80s and early 90s, leading into the Eric Lindros era. So I've always wondered how I got so lucky to get down in person and cover such a barren team for 1 year just blogging. That was only a 56-game season, and then for the past 3, been at the Wells Fargo Center in the press box covering a team that is really embarking on their first rebuild in franchise history. But anyway, trace back to the Phillies. This is my first year at Citizens Bank Park. And the only half of Phillies baseball I've ever covered was an absolutely outstanding one. 62 victories, best in Major League Baseball. They're a World Series contender right now. I buy them as a very legitimate threat, one of the favorites, at least in the National League. And I'm looking forward to the chaos of Red October, just with the atmosphere that's been going on down at the ballpark in the playoffs the last couple of years. This city really is at its best as a sports town when the Phillies are good, when you have that Red October vibe. There's the crisp fall air, and the Phillies are in World Series contention. But to the midway point of the season, I wanted to break down each of the 4 biggest elements of this team. That's starting pitching, bullpen pitching, the lineup, and the bench. Because the Phillies have had really one of the deepest teams in the majors this year. It doesn't look like they have many weaknesses top to bottom, but I wanted to give a little scrutiny to each of the position groups here. And I wanted to first go into the starting pitching, because I think that's really what's carried them to this point. They put such an emphasis on getting off to a better start to the season as a team. Remember the last 2 years, 2022 and 2023, they had really bad starts, and they really didn't pick up until around June or so. So in spring training, the organization as a whole, Dave Dombrowski, Rob Thompson, all the key figures, really put a heavy emphasis on getting off to a good start and not getting into this hole that they've been in against the Atlanta Braves the last couple of years, where you're not competing for the division in the second half. you're really just setting your sights on a wild card. Part of that was to stretch the starters out earlier in the season, though, and that's exactly what they've done this year. You see Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, and Christopher Sanchez. These guys have been absolutely outstanding. And these four can really go with anybody, especially in the playoffs. If you look at the league rankings in terms of starting pitching, the Phillies are just so high on the list on everything. They have the 3.22 ERA, which is first. The WHIP of 1.10, that's second. They're second in innings pitched, 5.55. Second in strikeouts with 5.32. They have the best opponent batting average, that's 2.22. And they have the most complete games. And remarkably, in the modern era of Major League Baseball, that only means three complete games. They were all shutouts, though. And that's a testament to Thompson allowing these guys to go deep in games and the durability of some of these pitchers, especially Ranger Suarez, because he's looked like such a warrior at certain points in the first half of the season. Looks like Zach Wheeler is one of the favorites for NL Cy Young. I think most of the books now have Chris Sale of the Atlanta Braves. He had a big first half. There were questions of whether he could stay healthy, but he does look like the lefty ace that Atlanta needed. But I think Zach Wheeler is as good as anybody in the majors. We'll see how it shakes out. A lot of times down the stretch, these things have a lot to do with health. They have a lot to do with availability, and that's something we're going to get to in a minute with Zach Wheeler and some of the other Philly starters. But I like Zach Wheeler's odds to win the NL Cy Young. I think he's a very formidable candidate there. And then if you look around the rest of the rotation, you have Ranger Suarez. He's just kept getting better over the last couple years. I remember back in the 2021 season, Suarez pitched out of the bullpen for a good amount of the year, and he was just unhittable. He was just quietly doing his job, too. He's so cool and collected on the mound that it really made people like him. So I thought Suarez caught on almost right away. And he's just continued to take steps up since then. This is really his first full-on season as a starter. And you saw at the beginning just how he caught fire. He had that long scoreless streak. I think it ended at 32 innings. That was the longest since Cliff Lee's time with the Phillies. And you also have Aaron Nola. I feel like Nola's success has gotten pushed to the back burner a little bit. Surprisingly, he signed that big contract in the offseason. Some people loved it. I thought it was a pretty decent deal, all things considered. Some people didn't like it, though, because Aaron Nola does take a lot of criticism in Philadelphia. That has to do with a lot of things. It's happened to homegrown players at certain points in history. I think it's also got to do with his demeanor. He's more of a laid-back Southern type. He's not much of a in-your-face competitor. I think Zach Wheeler kind of takes on that persona, and that's why he clicks a little bit better with the Phillies fan base and people that just want to get fired up for something. That's not really what Aaron Nola does, but doesn't mean he's not a great pitcher. He's been one of the most consistent starters in the majors the last couple of years. Rob Thompson, after his last start against the Dodgers, that was on Thursday night, he called him Mr. Consistency. And I thought that was a great way to put it because he has not been the Cy Young caliber guy, maybe that Zach Wheeler or even Ranger Suarez is. But Aaron Nola really has had a great first half. And before we move on, you want to get to Christopher Sanchez also. He, of course, got that contract extension June 22nd. Real testament to how much he's improved over the past two seasons, really. And I think it's the environment that he's pitching in. I think that has a lot to do with it. Remember the day he got the extension? He spoke through the translator, but he gave a lot of credit to Zach Wheeler and just making him competitive and saying that he learned a lot of things from Zach Wheeler. You've heard throughout the season that this starting rotation really works off each other. They almost compete to outdo each other, and I think it's very healthy competition, and Christopher Sanchez has benefited from that probably as much as anybody. The thing that you could worry about in this starting rotation, though, is lining guys up for the second half of the season. Zach Wheeler is experiencing back spasms right now. He's going to go 12 days in between starts. They're going to push him to the Minnesota Twins series. Same thing's going to happen with Ranger Suarez. So basically, if you're lining up your pitchers, Wheeler, Suarez, Nola, Sanchez, and then the fifth spot, who for now is going to be Tyler Phillips, they're going to start at three, go 3-4-5 in the first series, and then in the second series start with Wheeler and Suarez. This is a move to get these guys rest, but it's going to be 12 days for Wheeler in between starts and 11 days for Suarez in between starts. So if this was a normal point in the year and it had nothing to do with the All-Star break, those guys could have gone on the IL and been off by the time their next starts happened.